Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by anybody. It is the second day of the two-day mailbag to get to the rest of the questions that I wasn't able to get to last night or yesterday, depending on when you listened. I'm just going to dive right in. If you guys are looking for a place to listen to a podcast, though, check out Himalaya. It's free. It's everything that you would want a podcast app to be, and the one cool thing that I've really enjoyed about it has been it offering up other podcasts that I might like, depending on the other podcasts that I also listen to. I have been doing a ton of traveling recently. I have more traveling planned in the weeks to come, so it's going to be nice that they are going to help me out, help me find a couple of podcasts based on some of the other stuff that I like. So check them out. It's completely free. They've been a huge help to us here at this network and here for the show specifically. So let's continue to help those who are helping us. Today's show is also brought to you by Hotels.com and by Grip 6 Belts. So check out those great companies as well. Let's dive right back into this mailbag, though. I left off yesterday. I kind of went out of order to answer a quick question at the end of the show. That was about the uniforms or jerseys that the Lakers wore last year. They were mostly disappointing. So it was funny. I was thinking about this while I was writing about what I write about. Oh, Jimmy Butler wore purple and gold shoes and took a picture of it and made sure to put them right there in the screen for everybody to see. And it just made me really remember, like, gosh, that all the Lakers colors were just like a few shades too light last year. And I just want them to get back to, you know, actual gold in their uniform and not yellow. The purple was fine, I would say, for the most part. The shade of purple throughout the except for that, even that pinstripe one, one of the very many problems with that uniform was the color purple of the shade of that purple was almost like a now and later, which is not ever something that I want to associate the Lakers with in terms of hues of purple. So get back to that nice deep shade of purple, a nice deep gold shade, and get back to, you know, the way that the uniforms really probably should look. Anywho, today's show, I'm going to start with MG's Raiders, which I believe I've answered this before. It's almost verbatim of something I've answered before. But basically, the question is whether or not I think if the injuries happen and all that, that we are not having the same conversations that we've had throughout this offseason about the Lakers. Of course not. Of course that we look at the Lakers differently if they're, you know, in the playoffs. They probably wouldn't be in the playoffs still right now. I don't think they would have made the finals, but if they would have made the finals and they weren't such a disaster and Magic's experiment did go well, then of course we would be talking about this different. I personally would still probably be full off of all the crow I would have eaten. But that's not how that works, right? If only gets you so far. If the Titanic missed the iceberg, we would probably think a little bit differently about how that voyage went, right? Poor Jack wouldn't be at the bottom of the Atlantic right now. And Jack Dawson, that is. I think that's his name. If the Lakers, if they don't go through all those injuries. Now, do I, you know, the conversation that I had with Matt Moore a couple weeks ago or a week and a half ago, whenever that conversation took place, is trying to figure out, like, where on the spectrum of, you know, how close were they? Were they a four seed? Were they a bottom of the tier playoff team? What were they capable of doing in the playoffs? That's all debatable and stuff like that. But really, at this point, it was a disaster. Those injuries did happen, and even when those injuries, even had those injuries not taken place, there's no guarantee that the season goes completely hunky-dory, right? Like, if those injuries don't happen, do they still pursue Anthony Davis the way that they did? I want to say no, but do you think Magic could have stopped himself from doing that, right? Like, given how little willpower he seems to have to stop saying dumb stuff in the media, do you think he really would have stopped himself from potentially derailing the season in that respect? I can't say for sure. It's a hypothetical that, you know, some people might still want to hold on to, but at this stage, it's just a lot more productive. It's a lot more fruitful to look forward and look at what else might be coming for an organization that just needs to get itself situated. I saw the other day, and I saw it in passing on social media, that Jeannie Buss has apparently turned off comments on her Instagram. This has to be really hard for her. She's also made it really hard for herself. You know, she could have made this whole thing a lot easier on herself had she just, you know, operated like a competent owner. But she hasn't. And therefore, she has to deal with those consequences. Or, as she has shown that she is more interested in doing, not deal with those consequences. Dig her head in the sand and just act as if she can just push away all of these negative comments about her team and her performance thus far. So, it's a hypothetical, but it's not really worth spending too much time on. Let's go. The next question here is from Spooner84. I would like to share a theory which my brother and I have been discussing in regards to Rob's role entering free agency and the impact he can have in acquiring Kawhi. It's clear the relationship Rob Pelinka and Kobe Bryant have had factored into Jeannie's decision to bring Rob in as a GM. But my brother and I, my theory is Kobe's relationship with Rob could provide a bridge to entice Kawhi to come to the Lakers. Kobe has a... All right. Yes, sure. Kobe can play a role in these things. But one thing that I don't think got enough coverage in you know, all the disaster that the Lakers were there for a while was how angry Kobe reportedly got that his name was brought into the fold at all in respect to the Lakers. Now, it was in respect to the disaster that the Lakers are, not specifically like what role he's interested in playing in and what role he's interested in playing in and developing some of the kids, should they ask or whatever. It was just like, I think it was Stephen A. Smith, so also take this with a grain of salt, but basically Kobe wants everybody to keep his name out of their mouths as it pertains to the Lakers, which has been the case every single time this topic has come up in regards to the Lakers and his role with the team since he retired. He is like, I don't know how many times we're going to have to come back to this topic. You guys, Kobe does not want anything to do with the Lakers right now. He's moved on. He has all these other projects that he's focusing on. Stop coming back to this well. We don't need to keep doing this. We're like some desperate ex who just checks out Facebook pictures at 2 a.m. on whatever Kobe might be doing or whatever he might be liking or whatever he is going on in his life. Like, let him do him and let the Lakers focus on actually getting themselves better, not just getting themselves better through names that you recognize, right? That's what we got to be able to do, is move on and consider names that we don't recognize and ideas that we haven't recognized before, and move on and adapt to the processes that have allowed other organizations to succeed while the Lakers have continually fallen on their face. That's where we're at. Get used to it. We're going to take another quick second here. When we come back, we are going to keep on. I'm going to keep on answering your questions. All right, so the next question here comes from LamFam22. Hey, Anthony, if Kyrie Irving and Kawhi want to join to the Lakers, would a sign and trade with the Raptors be possible? So back when I first started, you know, having interest in basketball or in the NBA beyond like just casual fandom, sign and trades used to be super easy, right? And honestly, I don't understand why the NBA made it such a penalty to do, you know, go through that process nowadays the way that they do back then, or they did back then. It's weird. So the idea in moving away from sign and trades was it kind of sort of forces the player in question to stay with their team, right? The NBA and professional sports like to boast about the idea of free agency, but they don't actually want their players to have agency, right? Like, owners who are at the top of this industry would rather they just draft that player, and no matter what happened, they continue to pay that player until that they are done with that player, right? Like, that would be the absolute best case goal for most owners in owning NBA teams, right? They control the cards, they move the chess pieces all over the board, and they decide where the dominoes may lay or where they might fall, right? Now, rightfully, these leagues have fought tooth and nail to be able to earn and leverage for every bit of agency that the unions have been able to get for these players. And as a result, you know, now some might argue that it might have swung too far in the other direction. I would probably, I would respond to that by saying there's no such thing, seeing as it is the players who are responsible for the entertainment that is earning these billionaires huge amounts of money, right? And if you disagree with that, then like, you're more than welcome to go watch college sports, right? And watch whatever unethical display of entertainment that is. But for you know, this conversation here, the NBA, in one of their ways to limit some of that agency, basically negotiated and said, okay, so you guys can have this. Let's just say it was the Supermax deal, right? That as a way to keep a player in a city for a little bit longer than they might have been otherwise, we will allow them to sign for an astronomical number, right? And that's this big chip, this big carrot that is waiting for any player that so earns it, right? But the trade-off for that is, if we give you that, if we give you this players' union, we are now going to take this. And one of the things that they took was the sign-and-trade clause and how that impacts teams' ability to or players' ability to force their way out of a situation, and also allow the team to get something on their way out. And I just never understood that, like, an NBA team would say, "No, I don't actually want to get anything for this player." If at all, in a lot of these cases, if you're a team that is acquiring a player via sign and trade, it gets really complicated really quickly, and you get hard capped depending on your cap situation. So that for the Lakers would make it pretty tough to then go out and also, you know, fill out the rest of their roster after using such a huge portion of their cap, basically all of their cap, to whatever it would cost to sign Kyrie, whatever it would cost to sign Kawhi, and then also having LeBron on the team, right? So huge chunks of your cap is devoted to those three guys. You now have to find a way, while potentially hard-capped, to find, you know, at least 11 other guys, and preferably, or at least 10 other guys, and you know, as much as 12, to fill out the rest of your rotation, and that gets really complicated. So in theory, I'm going to go ahead and say that it's possible technically, but in practicality and logistically speaking, it's damn near impossible. Let's answer one more question here. Captain Matt writes, "Hey Anthony, good work on the pod lately, and I hope Pete's recovery goes well. For the trade talks with AD, do you think the Lakers should just upfront offer the entire young core and a lot of first round picks just to close out the deal? I know we want to try to save as much assets in a trade, but I think getting a third star is more realistic scenario if the Lakers have LeBron and AD." So So there's a few ways to approach this question. I've already talked at length about operating in good faith, right? And trying to get a team to do something that it likely doesn't want to do. We've gone over that before, but basically in theory, the Lakers already pissed off the Pelicans last year to a point where they might be operating from behind the eight ball to potentially land AD. So they have to approach the Pelicans with at least a realistic offer, right? Last year, the first offer that was floated out there was Rondo and a bunch of other players not named KCP. And I don't even know if they included any of like the important young core, like either Lonzo or Brandon Ingram. And as a result, I would imagine Dell Demps just hung up the phone and said, all right, F those guys, we're moving on completely. We'll see those guys in the offseason. Now, Dell Demps would not see anybody in the offseason, but I guess that's besides the point. In this case, though, instead of talking about just the good faith thing, I want to look at this from a standpoint and say, feasibly, cap-wise, if the Lakers are looking to acquire Anthony Davis and then also sign somebody beyond Anthony Davis, they would probably have to move most of their roster to make that happen cap-wise. Also, so look at it from this standpoint. If you land Jimmy Butler using all of your remaining cap money, you then now are probably at or slightly above the cap, depending on, or probably at the cap. And if you sign a couple guys, maybe you go above the cap, you go over the cap to sign those guys. Well, now in a trade, you have to be able to match the value in a trade for Anthony Davis, just cap-wise, right? So in this case, you would then have to, and the Lakers don't have very many bloated contracts outside of who would be LeBron and who would be Jimmy Butler. So you would have to try to come up with about $25-ish million by adding the rookie salary contracts that Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, Kyle Kuzma, Josh Hart, on down the line are all going to be on. And that just, it just gets really, just mathematically, you can't really do that without offering everybody up. So it's going to be interesting to see if the Lakers really do want to add multiple players here, how they find a way, multiple stars here, how they find a way to do that while also holding on to, say, a Brandon Ingram or a Lonzo Ball, right? I don't know if cap-wise they'll be able to do that. And you know, it should be a very important goal to them. Let's take another quick second here. When we come back, I'm going to round out the rest of your questions. All right, Big Timer writes, love the pod, thank you. Do you think the Lakers' chances of trading for AD increase if he isn't traded to another team before free agency begins? I think if Kyrie leaves the Celtics, I don't see them giving up the farm for AD. That would be one less suitor. So yeah, in theory, yeah, that's absolutely true. That now the counter that some in Boston have had up until I would say last week or so has been that Danny Ainge values Anthony Davis above Kyrie anyway, that he would try to acquire Anthony Davis outside of whatever happens with Kyrie anyway. That's not really how he has operated over the course of his tenure out there in Boston. So, you know, maybe that's how he goes, but I don't think that's really how that goes. But for the purpose of this conversation or this question, all that the Pelicans need for the Lakers is to have one suitor who is going to force the Lakers to push all their chips into the pot, right? If anybody comes up, and you know, we always think of the three main teams here being the Knicks, the Lakers, and the Celtics. Well, if a mystery team comes up, and or at least if the Pelicans say that a mystery team comes up with this wild offer, then they can hold that over the Lakers and say, nope, we're not going to accept this offer right now because we have this other offer on the table. And if the Lakers call that bluff and it turns out not to be a bluff, then the Lakers miss out on Anthony Davis, right? So basically for what I'm talking about here, if it comes down to it, right, you have to ask yourself, if you're the Lakers, what's the most important thing here? Is it landing Anthony Davis, or is it landing Anthony Davis at the right price, right? If you think there is a right price here for Anthony Davis, then chances are you're probably going to miss out on him, right? Because some other team probably has a price in their mind for Davis that is at or near the price that the Lakers consider here. And if the Pelicans get a return on an Anthony Davis trade that is at or near what the Lakers are willing to give up, then they're probably going to go with that other offer because they don't want to send Davis to the Lakers, right? And no matter what we hear from them, you know, about, oh, well, David Griffin has permission to send Anthony Davis to the Lakers. Yes, he does. I believe all those reports. I've thought that from the get-go, whenever, as soon as he was hired. But that doesn't therefore mean that he's allowed to take as much from the Lakers as he could get from somewhere else, because I don't think Gail Benson wants to send Davis where he wants to go, right? And I don't think Gail Benson wants to reward the Lakers for what she probably considers backhanded or underhanded tactics last year. So who knows how this all goes? I have no idea. But if there's an extent to which you will not pass in trying to land Anthony Davis, chances are, and you're the Lakers, chances are you're not going to get Anthony Davis because somebody else is going to have an offer that is at or near that line. And if you're the Lakers, you have to blow away probably the Pelicans compared to the other offers that are on the table. Got a couple more questions to go here. JMac2450 writes, how many games do the 2018 and 19 Lakers, assuming full health, win against the Warriors without KD? And would you see them winning a series against the Raptors? I think they win maybe one game, I would say. I think they win one game, maybe two. And if they only win one game, we'll say like the other game was a really close one that it just didn't go right at the very end, and the Lakers lost out on that one. Remember, the Lakers, like while it's easy to look at the Lakers and say, look, they were this four seed, and look at all the promise that they had. They were still going to rely really heavily on hugely unproven players in the playoffs, right? You can tell me, all right, you can say in the playoffs that playoff Rondo happened and JaVale McGee stepped up and you know, LeBron obviously did LeBron things. But you can't tell me that you could predict production from Lonzo Ball, from Brandon Ingram, from Josh Hart, from Kyle Kuzma in the playoffs. And the one thing that happens in the playoffs is as soon as a team finds a weakness out there, they just keep hammering that weakness, not just when they have the ball either. If the Lakers go out there and they play Lonzo Ball and he's reluctant to get to the free throw line, guess what? All these teams are going to direct their defense to do whenever he's out there, right? Do whatever it takes to force Lonzo to get himself to the free throw line. Dare him to drive to the basket and finish at the rim. If they're out there and Brandon Ingram goes cold from the outside and starts to get reluctant to shoot three-pointers, guess what all those teams are going to do? They're going to force him to try to shoot those three-pointers. If Kyle Kuzma goes through one of his cold streaks, and while we like to think of Kyle Kuzma as this thing that seems to make a lot of sense alongside LeBron, look at his numbers from last year. They weren't great, right? And if he continued that statistical production in the postseason, the Lakers would have really gotten into some trouble. So, yeah, in theory, sure, the Lakers, you know, maybe challenge the Warriors in a couple games there. But if you're assuming health for the Lakers, guess who else you have to assume health for the Warriors, even if you're saying KD isn't playing, right? And also, it's kind of a weird hypothetical to say, like, all right, in this instance, the Lakers are perfectly healthy, but in this instance, the Warriors are not, right? That just, logically, even in a theoretical situation, just doesn't seem right to me to do. So who knows? Let's go with the last question here. Comes from QBreezy12. With the Dodgers having the best record in the NL, how far do you see them going this year? I was joking with Vince from Locked On Dodgers, which, by the way, if you guys are looking for a Dodgers podcast to check out Locked On Dodgers, and especially Locked On Dodgers on Himalaya. But I was joking with him in DMs, and I was like, hey, it's a good thing I didn't go on Locked On Dodgers to begin the year, because that's something we're still talking about doing and still trying to figure out a day for us to do some kind of a crossover show or something. But had I gone on there, I would have been wrong about quite a bit about this team. So, you know, I guess that's on me, though. I don't know who could have predicted Cody Bellinger to just become an outright monster. And the Dodgers to play as well as they are offensively, especially offensively this year. But it just given what we've seen from them this year, it's hard not to feel like they're at least capable. Obviously, they're capable of getting back to a World Series, but they have to address that bullpen. It's terrifying, and there's nothing worse than having a bullpen that you don't have confidence in, especially come playoff time. It's just you otherwise, and this is something that I talk about with my dad all the time. Is Kershaw has had his postseason failures, right? But some of those postseason failures had a lot to do with the fact that he felt the need, or the Dodgers felt the need, to keep him in there an inning too long, or an inning longer than maybe he should have been in there, because they didn't trust their seventh inning pitchers, right? Their seventh or eighth inning pitchers to get to Kenley Jansen. And in this case, I would probably say that we're heading towards another situation like that, because of, again, this kind of middle-ish, late-ish relief situation that the Dodgers have. Maybe this is what the Dodgers are going to produce all year offensively, but who's to say? And I don't think you want to bank on outrageous statistical performances as the means by which, or the thing that you're going to win a World Series on the back of. When you know, here's the other thing too, is like, they have the assets, they have the flexibility to go out and get the proper middle reliever or a reliever. And yet, you know, with one Craig Kimbrell sitting right there, they seem reluctant now to do so, even while now he wouldn't even cost them compensatory draft picks. I don't know. This is not what I'm best at, talking about the Dodgers. I'm not going to keep rambling about this. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. When we come back tomorrow, we're going to have a guest, and I would imagine you're going to be pretty happy to hear who that guest is. But for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you then.